Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Projector Room, our podcast where we talk about films, cinema, and TV. And I'm joined, as always, by young Gareth and Alan. Hello. Hello, boys.
You absolutely reprehensible. Hello, how are you?
You're almost my age, so we're the old farts here.
We are, I'm afraid so.
Good to have you back on the show as always, and we have got a website, projectorroom.co.uk. That's where you'll find links to all the stuff we're going to talk about today, and also it'll be in your podcatcher, and also you'll find links out from tedsalmon.com to all of our audio podcasts and all of our MeWe groups, and we scoop up some stuff from the MeWe group to chat about now. GarethMiles.com is where you'll find Gareth. And
hello.
The first bit of feedback from the MeWe group is from Malcolm Bryant, and he's been watching The Beast in Me, which is a mini TV series on Netflix, 8-part thriller created by Gabe Rotter and Claire Danes, Matthew Rhys, Brittany Snow, and Natalie Morales. A best-selling writer is given the opportunity to write a book about a ruthless real estate mogul who may or may not have killed his first wife. The series title didn't especially appeal to me, but it stars two of my favourite actors from two of the best series of the last decade, Claire Danes from Homeland and Matthew Rhys from The Americans. So that was enough to persuade me to give it a try. As expected, Ms. Danes is excellent. There is no one better at expressing a range of emotions in her facial expressions, and Mr. Rhys is convincing as a stop-at-nothing, arrogant alpha male. My wife and I gave it the thumbs up. So there you are. The Beast in Me on Netflix. I think I tried to watch Homeland once, but it was just so American and political. Is that the right one?
I think so. Yeah, isn't it? Well, the CIA or something, or NSA?
Sleeper cells and
right. Yeah.
Well, perhaps it wasn't political then. Perhaps something. No,
it is. It is. It's sort of about the deep state, I think.
Okay.
Well, one of the seasons is about the deep state, but the rest of it is more about Islamic terrorist who's been played by, what's his name, what's the British guy called? Damien Thingy, from that vampire movie. He plays Brody, who's a sleeper cell agent who is to create a terror event in America, and Claire Danes has to track him down, and then they just sort of build off of that, and it's a corker of a TV show. It middled off in the third season, you know, it wasn't too great, but then it got right back on track when Rupert Grint, wasn't it? No, the guy from Hitman. I can't remember names tonight, what's wrong with me? He came in and took the series in a new direction. It's an excellent one. It's one of those ones that I had to buy on Blu-ray, and if it's anything like, if Beast in Me is anything like Homeland, then it's an absolute must-see. Claire Danes is just superb.
Cool. All right, thank you.
And The Americans? Have I really seen The Americans?
No, I've
seen several Americans.
Yeah, I ain't seen it.
No. Anyway, thanks, Malcolm. That's good. The Beast in Me, Netflix, 8 parts, mini TV series. Go and watch it. Gareth, Robert McCrown is next.
He is, and he has watched off of Amazon Prime the 6-episode TV series Lazarus, starring Sam Calfan, Bill Nighy, you fancy him, don't you?
Yes.
Eloise Little, and Ewan Horrocks. A psychiatrist returns from London following the suicide of her father. This opens a whole can of worms and personal demons for his son. It is made worse when the father returns as the ghost and tells the son that he was murdered. A whole series of twists and false starts follow to keep us gripped. You have to work out what is real and what is not. Oh, that's just put me off, and I hate that. Oh, sorry.
Yeah, I hate that as well.
I had worked out the ending by the last episode. It was excellent storytelling. Recommended. Thank you, Roland Grant, but you kind of killed it there for me. I haven't seen too much about this. It does look quite good. I had a quick flick at the trailer. Was it 2 weeks ago? I think I almost brought it to the show, but I decided not to in the end because I just figured it was probably one that the two of you might not actually like, despite the fact Ted loves Bill.
Yeah, I can always watch Bill Nye, no question at all. That plot sounds a bit like the plot of Woody Allen's Scoop film, where this the guy comes back and keeps appearing to them and tries to tell them that he was murdered, and it sounds like a very similar plot to me. But Lazarus, which is on Amazon Prime, as you say, 6 episodes. Thanks, Robert, for bringing that. I'm going to go for flop of the fortnight now, and Ozzy Osbourne, No Escape from Now. There's no doubt at all that the central story of, you know, Ozzy Osbourne and his life is really sad, as it would be for anyone, really, having all this stuff wrong with him, with his Parkinson's and all of that. And it was very sad. And the end days, which popular myth had it, were involved going to Switzerland to that organization to get terminated. But when I dug deeper into that, that was just a myth. It was taken out of context from what Sharon said on a idealistic interview one day on telly. He died at home. Anyway, the film is largely about building up towards his last shows in the last four years of his life, and the final one is at Aston Villa Football Club, where he was trying really hard to appear to his local crowd in Birmingham before he passed away, sort of thing. But the whole film, the reason it's in flop of the fortnight is for a number of reasons, actually. But the first one is that it's savagely edited. You know, you get to the point where you've got to the final show, and then suddenly you're in the concierge, is that the right word, the procession of his body through the streets, and it's just like there's nothing in between, there's nothing about him actually dying and the family and all that, and it's very much a documentary which the family have put together, and you know, fair enough, it's not really a film as such, it's a they've allowed this documentary team to come into their lives for the last 4 years of his existence. But what annoyed me even more about it was having to watch 2 hours of musicians just clearly massaging their egos and the egos of the musicians around them to get the opportunity to be on camera, center stage, milking the limelight. I guess it's something that just gets worse with fame as people are become more famous, and that they're encouraged to think by their fans that they're in some way superhuman. But celebrities generally just irritate me so much, and this was full of them. Musicians, I think, are worse than anyone else, because I don't know why, but they just seem to think they're God's gift to the universe, and you know, they just behave in such an outrageous way because they're milking up the fame, I suppose. Because of the all of those reasons, I really didn't like it, and I would suggest that unless you're a real Black Sabbath fan, you know, you'll not be able to see past all of that, but maybe I'm wrong. Chris Kelly agreed with me. I loathe the cult of celebrity, as he says. You'd have to nail me to the floor and pin my eyelids open to watch this. So he's with me. So any thoughts on that? On what I've said, or the show, if you've seen it or seen trailers or whatever?
Haven't seen the show, Ted, but I totally agree with you. I think hopefully we're nudging into a post-celebrity world. I would like to think, I would posit that actors are actually more offensive than musicians.
Right.
Because they seem to be even more incapable of reining in their personal political opinions or their lifestyle advice than musicians. And they pontificate at every opportunity, quite unsolicited. And they only do it in a very partisan way as well. It always seems to be the same people giving the same message. So right. No, I'm with you on that. I was not a big fan of Ozzy Osbourne personally, or you know, musically or whatever, but certainly recognize what a great contribution he made to music. Mm-hmm. A phenomenal entertainer, etc., etc. Mm-hmm. I'm happy to have missed this one personally.
Yeah, and there was only a passing reference to the fact that he used to shoot acid and take all sorts of drugs, and he was, you know, he was pissed most of the time. You know,
he wasn't a great help to himself in many ways.
Yeah, that's it. But not much of that came across. It was all very much focused on, oh, how sad it is. And it was sad. There's no, of as course, I say, it's very sad. But there was a broader picture that wasn't really highlighted. It came across as him just whinging a lot. And he's got every right to whinge if he's feeling in pain. And I would whinge if I was in pain as well. Anyway, I've said enough. Any thoughts, Gareth, or not?
Well, I do think that there's a good opportunity that you can maybe go out and see the other two or three documentaries, because I do remember hearing in a news article that there were a ridiculous amount of documentaries going on by all the big networks about him,
right?
And you've just watched one of them now. Yeah. But I suppose you would then have to suffer the intolerable musicians two or three more times in order to get a full feel of what was going on here and all the stories that were told. Because this one could be commissioned by the estate, whereas other ones, like maybe one that Sky did or Netflix or Mother Care or something like that, they've gone delved in and actually have the dirt that you kind of want to see, or the drama, the interest, that sort of stuff.
Okay, fair enough. But it's staying in Flop of the Fortnight anyway. Private screening. Okay. It's Alan, you challenged us. What did you challenge us with?
I challenged you to watch The Opportunists, and I believe you both accepted the challenge. So The Opportunists is a 1999 Christopher Walken movie. Full film is linked and available to watch for free on YouTube. I say YouTube, say for free, I have the premium service, so it's not inundated with adverts. Christopher Walken and Cyndi Lauper plays the female lead.
Hey!
And and she's... so I had never seen this movie before, and in fact, I don't recall even hearing of it. Christopher Walken plays a sort of middle-aged guy who had robbed a bank in his past and had a crisis of conscience, and actually went back, handed himself into the police and returned the money, but still served time. So he's a good bad guy, if you will. He's subsequently fallen on very hard times and cannot make ends meet living a crime-free life. He's trying to get by doing a bit of mechanics work and this and that, but he's fallen into debt. And above all, he can't keep up the payments on his auntie's or his grandmother's lodgings in a care home. So it looks like gran or auntie or great aunt Beryl is about to be turfed out onto the tough streets of New York, or I think it's maybe New Jersey or New York, unless he can, you know, cough up the cash. So that puts the kind of screws on him. He falls in with a bad bunch who want him to do one little straightforward hit or heist that will get them all back and up and running on their feet, and then they won't have to work again. So he's very little options, really. And so that's the premise of the movie. And let's hand over to Gareth to hear his thoughts about the film, and then we'll go to yourself, Ted, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Ach, no, we'll go to Ted. Let's go with Ted.
Shall we run with Ted?
Yeah, we'll go with Ted. That's better.
Okay. My impression of it was that it was a nice little indie feeling film, and it put me very much in mind of the I don't know if you've seen Trees Lounge, the Steve Buscemi film. I've got a feeling he directed it as well. I think it was his first film he directed. Anyway, a film about a bunch of ordinary people down on their luck trying to do the decent thing. But, you know, plodding through life, poverty getting in the way. And as you said, Alan, you know, the opportunity comes to try and change the equation. And in the same Steve Buscemi kind of role, I think that Walken does a really good job. He's understated. He plays the ordinary bloke really, really well. And, you know, because normally we see him in these kind of big military captain roles or money man or someone that's suited up or powerful, a powerful person of some sort, and here he's not. It's the complete opposite. He's a guy on the street, and it's a different side, and he does it really, really well. He's totally convincing, although it doesn't feel, to be honest, it looks as if he's trying too hard, but that's okay. He drifts through it and it's fine. Cyndi Lauper plays his kind of girlfriend who runs the pub, and she's quirky and fun in a few scenes. She wasn't in it very much, but she's actually quite a cute little actress, I think, and singer, of course. Peter MacDonald is competent. He plays the Irish relative that turns up and talks Walken into doing the job. It's all fairly laid back, though. It's a laid back story. The cops are laid back. It does feel quite dated. There's a daughter in it as well, called Vera Farmiga, and she's very good, and she's quite cute. She's not in it an awful lot either, but she was in the series Bates Motel, which I watched quite recently. I mentioned it on the show probably a year or two ago. She plays Norma, Bates's mum, and that's really good fun, that series, and I remembered her from that, so that's good. It's a kind of slow film, is The Opportunists. It's much less about the heist as being a drama about him, the Walken character, and his life, missed opportunities. It's just a nice little film. It's almost a kind of character study, really. And I really enjoyed watching it. I thought it was a good film, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. Gareth?
No, it's important we hear from Alan. Alan next, absolutely. I think Alan okay. really need to follow
Gareth,
that up.
Gareth's clearly hiding. He hasn't done his homework, or he's got an amazing
he's watching
presentation.
It now.
Yeah. Why we laugh. I'm with you on this, Ted. I thought it was a nicely observed and interestingly understated story with understated performances. Kind of run the risk occasionally, I think, of being just a little bit flat and pedestrian. But I thought overall it was interesting that it avoided shootouts and very big pyrotechnic scenes. And, you know, even emotionally, it was all kept fairly controlled and understated. Mm-hmm. I thought that his daughter was absolutely gorgeous, really attractive, and very strong performance from her. And the other standout was the fella who played his long-lost distant cousin, ostensibly, who comes over from Ireland.
I think that's the Peter MacDonald actor, isn't it?
And Peter MacDonald, yeah. Thank you. I was just about to check on that. And I thought he kind of stole the show. He had a really good sort of young leading man charm about him. And you knew that there was initially you kind of like thought, oh, this poor fella's down this luck, and you were on board with him. And then, of course, as the story proceeds, there are other dimensions that open up. It's not a spectacular film in any shape or form, but consistent, nicely observed, unpretentious, and workmanlike, I think. And I agree that it was nice to see Walken do something that was less flamboyant. Mm-hmm. Occasionally, I find him a little bit too charismatic or quirky, but that's just, I think, probably overexposure to him across the wide range of his work. So I'm a big fan of his work, and I think he's absolutely terrific. If you remember, we were recently talking about the Apple show Severance, in which he was outstanding, playing an elderly man very much in love with one of his male colleagues, and a very, very sensitive and interesting kind of nuanced performance in that was absolutely fascinating. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, great stuff. Gareth, are you with us yet, or are you kind of still microwaving your dinner or whatever you're up to?
Oh, no, that's fine. I thought this was a nice little indie feeling film. It put me in the mind of Steve Buscemi's, what was it called? Oh, Trees Lounge.
I think I see where this is going.
He hasn't watched it, has he?
He hasn't. He's done a good day, as we call it.
I had to have a go. I'm a bit of an opportunist. I might have completely forgotten about it until you mentioned it.
Oh, no worries, man, no worries.
And I didn't get a chance to even clock it because I kind of joined the podcast like Indiana Jones rolled out of the, across the floor and at the last minute. And
Been there, as you know, a couple of times. That's good. I would be very, very surprised if you had strong feelings one way or the other over, what Ted and I are saying. Honestly, I don't think there's anything in the movie that provokes a really strong reaction. Would that be fair, Ted?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's just a good solid, back. Nice little film.
Yeah, it's very laid back. It's a little drama, and I think it worked really nicely. And as I say, and as Gareth said now, Trees Lounge is a really interesting kind of parallel kind of film to watch. I'm going to give it 7, Alan, and I reckon instead of hoping that Gareth at some point will watch it, we'll average our scores and give him a score between the two of us. What are you going to give it?
Well, I'm going to give it a 7 as well.
Okay, so it's going to get 21 then. So 21 is the score, which puts it about a third of the way down the list with The Arrival, The Mist, Spider-Man Universe, The Hole in the Ground. Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. Oxygen. That Oxygen was good as well. I like that.
Which one was Oxygen?
It was the one where this girl was stuck in a yeah. She was running out of oxygen. She was in this pod.
Oh yes, very sort of claustrophobic.
French. It was a French thing.
Yeah,
wasn't it?
Yeah.
Anyway, so there you go. It puts it about a third of the way down, and there you have it. Right, it's my turn on the next show to pick something, and we'll see if Gareth tries hard to join us this time. I thought I would come up with a new idea, slightly different. And I happen to notice that shorts are all over. I don't mean the short format upright videos. What I mean is short films that are all over YouTube. Yes. And I thought, there's so many of them. I put a link here in the show notes for us to have an example. I searched on Google for the term, I searched in YouTube on the term shorts films or something, and that was a list of them that came up. But I thought that would be quite a nice little new thing to do. Everyone goes off and watches a short, so it may not need to take up so much of Gareth's precious time. And we can come back on the next show, ahead of the next show, and tell each other what we picked, and then we could have a chat about our picks on the next show.
Sounds good.
Yeah? Gareth?
Yeah, that sounds grand. I've just watched too many other things, and I just didn't even think about it. I don't know what happened. Maybe I'm losing my mind. Maybe I'm getting older, and things are starting to... Well, I forget words all the time, so it's only a matter of time before I start forgetting to do things. I just wet myself as well. I forgot to go to the toilet twice today.
Did you get the spot of shame on the way back?
It's a spot of shame. It's more like this all-encompassing circle. They wear light blue trousers, now they're dark blue.
Oh man, it's all downhill from here, chum.
Right, okay then. So that's the plan for next show. And now it's time for themed treats. And Alan, you challenged us with whom?
Yeah, with Edgar Wright. So do you want to take it away for us there? Gaza, since you've flunked out of sophomore year so far.
Okay, well, I can start off with I suppose I should introduce him, shouldn't I? Because he's a British director, is he not?
I do believe he is.
He was born somewhere in the UK in and around the 70s. And he's got a new film coming out at the moment, which is probably one of the reasons why we're talking about this. Or talking about him, and that would be The Running Man, and it's making some headlines at the moment. But
not positive ones.
rather than going back and that's true, yes. Rather than going back and visiting the ones that, well, the obvious ones that told for himself, I figured I would throw in one that got really rave reviews, but it seems to have been forgotten about because it does get tarred with that brush of, oh dear, he's in it. Because it's a Kevin Spacey movie called Baby Driver. And this thing was fantastic. It was absolutely chock full of great performances from the likes of John Hamm, Kevin Spacey, John Berthnell, Eliza Gonzalez, and Ansel Elgort in the main role. And it was just chock full, again, once more, that term, of car chases and guns and all sorts of things. It was really good fun. It was fast, funny, and I'm a lover of the likes of Smokey the Bandit and Cannonball Run. It kind of felt like a more updated version of a proper car chase type movie. Maybe those aren't the best ones to choose. Maybe the Driver's. Barry, what's his face? Viggo Mortensen remade it. Vanishing Point, that kind of car chase thriller with just a bit of a tongue-in-cheek. Really, really is an excellent action film, and I thoroughly recommend it to anyone. But I would actually recommend Ted's a little bit more. Ted?
I don't know which one you mean, but I'm going to let you talk about that, because I have to admit that until you mentioned his name on the last show, Alan, I didn't really know who Edgar Wright was. Now, having had a look at further who the hit list, his credits. I can see that he did World's End in 2013, Shaun of the Dead 2004, and Hot Fuzz in 2007. And I can remember watching them when they came out, and I have visited them. I did find them kind of funny. I do quite like Simon Pegg in small doses, so that made the difference for me to some degree, but to be honest with you, unless I go back and watch them again, I can't remember an awful lot about them. Shaun of the Dead, I think I probably remember the most, when they're just kind of basically going around shooting and killing zombies. Alan, Gareth, I think that you should talk about them, because you know all about them and will have much more of an informed opinion than me.
Oh, fair enough then. The Coronado Trilogy, I don't think really needs too much of an introduction. It is a corker of a series where two of them are two of the strongest movies ever made. I'm not that much of a fan of The World's End. I actually think that brings the whole trilogy down. I really didn't enjoy it, and I've only watched it once in the cinema, and that was that. But Shaun of the Dead is a zombie spoof, I suppose, of the Romero Dawn of the Dead series, and it is just constant hilarity. It taps into that kind of ultra modern tongue in cheek jokey thing about how society is viewed today, and if you were to apply a zombie apocalypse to those who are so, you know, entitled and enabled and things like that in today's society, and how they would laugh or how they would react to it and things. And it's constantly funny. Hot Fuzz sort of twists things around a bit, and it's a big, funny action movie with some superb stunt work. One of the best British casts I think we've had since... Well, one of those Agatha Christie movies back when, you know, every single scene just has someone who wants to be in this. And, it's even Timothy Dalton is notable here, because it's one of his, you know, most notable performances. I'm not saying best performances, because he always gives a great performance, but because he's back in a commercial movie, and he tends not to do that terribly often. You got Martin Freeman and Ted's lover Bill Nighy, and Joe Cornish is in there as well, and Bill Bailey, and there's Paul Freeman, Stuart Wilson. It's just a fantastic collection of faces, gags. It sends up so many beloved action movies like Point Break, and it mentions them. I think that's one of the best things that they have going on, is that they constantly nod and even make reference to obvious references to other films that people love so much. So whenever you're coming to this, you feel like you're amongst friends having a laugh about those films, and just every moment is like, oh, it's a joyous thing, you know, firing your gun straight up in the air. And where he's got the two shotguns mounted to his back and covered in ammo. And
that's right.
Nick Frost just playing that dithering idiot who...
But totally adorable. Totally lovable. Absolutely. Big Beefus. Yeah.
Those two are absolute classics and very much worth watching. And I can't remember very much about The World's End, but it didn't make too much of an impression on me. But Alan, have you seen those three?
Yes, I have indeed, and I totally agree with you. I think they're absolutely wonderful to varying degrees. Shaun of the Dead is just so funny, brilliantly original, just some great staging as well and directing. The opening shot as Simon Pegg staggers, you know, from the sofa across to the local corner shop to get some Cornettos and staggers back all the time, utterly oblivious to the zombie apocalypse that is sort of unveiling itself around him, and that's a great piece of opening. You know, it's a lovely piece of writing and directing. Very, very funny. Great exposition and tells you everything you need to know right at the outset. So it was great. And again, Hot Fuzz. The first 30 minutes of that, there's not a spare frame in it. Every line, every shot is just crammed full of wonderful, you know, story propellant and character propellant and gags at chock-a-block. It's just completely wonderful and very, very skilled filmmaking and hugely likable characters. And I think the other thing Edgar Wright gets a lot of credit for, deservedly, are these little smash montages, you know, of where we'll cram a bunch of action into a little sequence. And he might say, for example, cross-cut between pulling of pints and locking and loading shotguns or something like that. It's all done with extremely high-impact, kinetic sort of cross-cutting between various activities. And then they're sort of squished down, if you like, in a compressor, you know, into these super dense little micro-montages that are packed full of ideas and visual energy, and they're, again, just very, very helpful in terms of cranking through stuff that other directors might labour. World's End, I agree with you. I think for me, that film was less funny because it really deals with a very lonely and unhappy middle-aged man, and it was so well done that it was quite uncomfortable for a lot of it, whereas the earlier stuff was easier to like the characters. This guy is a complete tosser, so it's harder to get behind him. And the kind of way in which they present the burnt-out husk of the town of their youth and the empty ritual of trying to go back to the pubs where they all had fun and where they all met and had the formative experiences of their lives was done again very, very powerfully, where just they were in a kind of soulless phase of their life. And that, for me, just took the comic edge off it because it was done so well. But I do like the movie, and I think it's generally streets ahead of, you know, most comedies, even though it's the one I, like yourself, like the least. Probably the show that I thought would be worth having a wee look at is Spaced. The whole series, I think, is available on YouTube, and certainly the first episode. And Spaced was a 1999 sitcom that ran for 2 years and was the show that got Pegg and Frost and Edgar Wright up and running. And it's about a comic book artist who has to find digs and then has to pretend that he's married to a girl that he meets in a cafe in order that they can secure the rental of a flat. For whatever reason, whoever rents the flat has to be in a long-term relationship or whatever. So that's the premise of that. They have to pretend that they're a couple And the live-in landlady has to be oblivious to the true nature of the fact that they're complete strangers and struggling to get along at all. And Nick Frost plays the best mate who turns up with to play video games and eat the digestives. And he's sort of recovering from a breakdown, having stolen a tank and tried to invade Disneyland. So, and they have these most insane, bizarre, little surreal adventures. They go and liberate animals that have been kind of freed by animal liberation people. They have a silent gunfight in slow motion where they air guns, you know, like they're pretending that they're carrying weapons, which they aren't, and then they add all their own slow motion effects and bullet hits. Like you do when you're 8 in the playground, but they stage it all like a massive shootout from Scarface. There's a couple of scenes like that that are just terrifically funny and inventive, and it's all surreal and quite bonkers and utterly adorable. So, it's great, and it's jam-packed, by the way. If you're interested in films and so forth, as clearly our esteemed audience are, it's jam-packed with references to Kubrick and other filmmakers of note and films of note. There's one in particular which seems to be a kind of revisiting of The Shining, and those are very entertaining because they don't annoy you, they just amuse you, and they're very, very creatively reframed as well. So wonderful, wonderful show. I still revisit Spaced every couple of years just for the giggles. It's just wonderful.
I had a look at Spaced a couple of times. I think Gareth put me onto it quite a while back, and I tried to have a go at it then, and I got through most of the first series, I think. And this week, seeing that you put that in there, I watched a couple of episodes. I haven't got to what the thing you were talking about with the shooting and the slow motion. But the girl that is supposed to be his girlfriend was the girl that was next door in the royal family. I was trying to work out where I knew her from.
Oh, right.
And she was a little kind of timid girl that used to come in from next door in the royal family. I think it had potential. It just wasn't really grabbing me and gripping me, but maybe I'll continue. Now I've started watching it again, I'll perhaps try and get a bit further with it get to some of those things that you've been talking about. Meantime, I watched Murder Most Horrid. Now this is a French and Saunders thing from the early 90s, where they did this kind of series of spoofy kind of little stories, a bit like the League of Gentlemen team doing the Number 9 stuff and that sort of thing. And there's one episode which he directed called Confessions of a Murder, which was series 4, episode 4. And that's it, just that one episode. And I watched that last night, and I thought to myself, apart from the fact that there is some creative use of camera work, you really wouldn't know that someone famous was doing this. Unless you knew that, you would just kind of watch it and you just think it was the same as any other episode. So there was that. I mean, it was quite a funny episode, which is fine. But that's what I was. Have you seen Murder Most Horrid?
I haven't.
Okay. Gareth?
No, I haven't either. I don't think. It sounds familiar, though.
It's a French and Saunders production, and some of the episodes are hit and some of them are miss. They did, I mean, they persevered with it, and they did, as I say, 4 series of it. So worth having a look at anyway. You mentioned earlier The Running Man, which is the 2025 film from Edgar Wright, and I noted this last week that Chad Dixon, our friendly listener, had done a written review, which I put on my blog, linking that to the show notes. But he also decided to read his review out, and I thought, that's something different. We haven't done this before. Let's plug in, at this point in the show, Chad's written review of his own review, his own voice, and have a listen to it. So here he is. Take it away, Chad.
The Running Man, 2025, a guest review by Chad Dixon. As a big Arnie fan, of course I've seen the 1987 film adaptation of the novel by Stephen King, which amazingly is set in 2025. As a result, I was always going to be thinking of that when I first heard that there was a remake on the cards. British director Edgar Wright, the Cornetto trilogy, brings this version to the big screen now, and he's also its producer and co-writer. Here, the USA has become an anarchistic police state ruled by greedy corporate media networks. Most people are living in poverty with little or no access to affordable health care. So, absolutely not a realistic timeline at all, eh? Trapped in the Boston slums and with few prospects, Ben Richards, Glenn Powell, is a blue-collar worker with a very sick two-year-old daughter struggling to make ends meet. He is currently blacklisted, so cannot get a job, and by the pressured influenza medicine his child desperately needs. His wife, Sheila, Jamie Lawson, is a hostess at a posh gentleman's club, but although working more shifts than she'd care to, is not making enough money on her own to support the family. At home the next day, a demoralized Ben is watching TV game shows and notes down all the possible prize monies on offer. When Sheila finally comes home after another extended shift, Ben says he knows how to get the family out of poverty and goes to the big network building in the city center to queue up and try out to be on one of the many extreme game shows with determination to win money that they need. After the many extensive grueling tryouts, a couple of other hopefuls and Ben are taken to meet Slick executive producer Dan Killian, Josh Brolin, to be offered the chance to play on the biggest and most popular game show on TV. After much persuasion from Killian, and against the wishes of Sheila, Ben signs up to be a contestant in The Running Man, the premise of which is to successfully evade the hunters for 30 days and get a grand prize of $1 billion new US dollars. In the original Schwarzenegger version, the scope was much smaller as all the action was more gladiatorial and took place in prearranged arenas. Here, there are no boundaries as Ben's evasion from the hunters takes us all over the city and beyond with good use of current unusual architectural locations to backdrop the futuristic dystopian cityscapes. I got well invested from the very beginning as there's no long build-up to establish the family's situation. The set pieces are well choreographed and keep the core of the film moving at a nice pace. But even through the 2 hour and 30 minute runtime seemed a tad long, I did feel a bit let down at the final act as it seemed a little hurried, leading to a fairly disappointing resolution. However, Glenn Powell definitely meets the criteria of leading man as the camera laps up his big screen persona. One is definitely swept along throughout, empathizing with his struggle. There's a few other good supporting roles of note, too. Coleman Domingo as the charismatic showman host Bobby T in the studio is effervescent. William H. Macy as Ben's first ally, Molly, gives a solid down-to-earth performance. And Michael Cera, almost unrecognizable with a grisly goatee, as the kooky rebellious sympathizer that Ben encounters later on. Ultimately, I think this is one of the better remakes updates of a 1980s science fiction action film that I've seen recently, although I really couldn't tell you if Edgar Wright has placed his discernible stamp on it. No doubt Glenn Powell will get more roles as a rugged, intrepid leading man, so he looks very much like his mentor, Tom Cruise, seems to have done a good job.
Thanks very much, Chad. That's great. And it did put me, it put me in mind of Squid Game, I suppose. There was that Korean one that I was watching a while back, which someone reviewed, where there was this kind of deadly game going on in this block of flats. And it sounds very, I haven't seen the Schwarzenegger one. Do either of you either know any of this sort of stuff?
The original Schwarzenegger movie is a real ripping yarn, and it couldn't be more 80s if it tried.
Right.
It's full of testosterone gusto and crazy sort of bombastic vulgarity, and it's great fun. It's certainly not a great movie, I wouldn't have thought, but it's a very enjoyable sort of sci-fi action film mm-hmm. of its time. I'm hearing, you know, generally very negative reactions to the Edgar Wright one, uncharacteristically.
Right, okay. It seems that differently to the Schwarzenegger one, Chad's just said that it's not... The Schwarzenegger one, which I haven't seen, is set in an arena, and this new one is kind of set in a town and beyond, and so it's kind of a bit more expansive. Gareth, any thoughts?
Well, I have heard the negative reviews of The Running Man, and it is concerning me a great deal, but it's just one of those things that, you know, it's a Schwarzenegger movie, so taking him out of it really loses most of what you really want. Like, they did that before with Total Recall, and Colin Farrell was in there, and it was all right. I quite enjoyed it. I didn't mind it too much, but
what's wrong with you, man?
No, because I just wanted a wee bit of sci-fi and a bit of action and things like that, and it worked for me that night. I watched it. I've only seen it that one time, and there was something about Kate Beckinsale's trousers that amused me greatly.
Hey-o.
Yeah, they were good. taking Schwarzenegger out you go to see those sorts of movies for that particular person. Absolutely. You know, you're not going to sit down and watch Dirty Harry without Clint Eastwood. You can't do that.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. Mm. Anyway, that was good of Chad, and I appreciate it taking the time to send that in. Thanks, Dave.
Absolutely. Well done. So, right, my turn on the next show to choose a director, and it's going to be Jonathan Demme, or Dem.
Oh, cool.
How do you pronounce that?
Yeah. Demme, I would have thought.
Right,
yeah.
Okay. Which, in my mind, famously, for me, it's all about The Silence of the Lambs. But when I was looking through the backlog, there's loads more that he's done that I really didn't realise. So it will be a bit of a learning curve for me as well. And there's enough, I think, for us all to kind of chip in and have a chat about his work. So we'll have a look at that one on the next show.
So,
go on.
I was just saying, that's great.
Oh, right.
Good choice.
Okay. Now, the main feature, I nominate Gareth to go first because his selection looks very interesting.
All right. Well, I'm not going to spend too long on each of them because I've got so many of them, but I'm just trying to... I've been bashing through movies like crazy recently. I don't know why I've been able to watch them, just not the stuff that I was supposed to be watching for this show. It's about 2 weeks ago I watched this now, but I snapped up Nobody 2 as soon as I could watch that. Mm-hmm. And because I did rather like the first one. I'm not going to admit that I love it or anything like that. I didn't mind the first one. I have a thing about modern action movies where the action sequences look really choreographed, and Nobody 2 both suffer from that, where a bit like John Wick as well, where you see them fighting and it just, you know, you can see them go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 as they do hit, and it doesn't feel like they're having a proper fight like they used to. But I can look past that and enjoy it for the rest of the film. And Nobody 2 is absolutely fine. I will never watch it again. It entertains. It's kind of witty. I spent most of the time trying to remember the last time I saw Sharon Stone play that over-the-top bad girl type thing or baddie, and it was actually Catwoman. Took me that long to work out because I knew she'd done it before, but I couldn't remember how and when. She was quite good, but you know, it's just one of those things where there's an aging star who's trying to be cool with the kids, and it feels like that, you know, bits where she's dancing and stuff like that, and it's fine that she's doing that, but it felt, you know, we're trying to make this cool for the kids. And Christopher Lloyd, I love Christopher Lloyd, but I felt that they could have done the casting better, where this character of Nobody, who is like a secret agent, they could have put someone else in who was a wee bit more secret agent-y. In the way that they would sort of bring Connery in to play like an aging Bond or something like that, or an aging secret agent, but obviously Connery's not available, neither is Roger Moore, so Timothy Dalton could have done it. Right. But, you know, it just felt like, you know, Christopher Lloyd's not known for action movies, so having him have a larger cameo in a movie like this just doesn't feel quite right, and it was a missed opportunity where his dad could have been someone really cool. Yeah. Robert Redford actually would have been really good for that. Yes. But the one thing I did enjoy was Colin Hanks, Tom's son.
Oh, yeah.
Tom.
Fargo.
He was fantastic. Yeah, yeah. And he's, I don't know if he's trying to introduce himself as an action star or something like that, because well, I don't think he has too much action in this, but he certainly cuts the look of one. I was expecting him to be the big bad guy that Bob Odenkirk has to go up against at the end of the film or something. I think we're going to see him hitting big in some sort of action movie, because the way his hair was cut and his physical appearance, he's just fittened up and put on the big guns and stuff. So, yeah, he's appearing in Nuremberg next, I think, the one with which we'll be talking about later in the show. So I reckon we've got a bit of a star in him, and I think he hasn't quite hit in his stride the world of movies the way his dad did so quickly, but I'd like to see more of him as a leading man in movies, and I think he could be a good action star. But you know, Nobody 2 is quite funny. It's very colourful. It's got a plot that was, I feel like, came afterwards. It's like, we're making a movie, we're making a sequel. What's it about? Don't know, but it's just going to happen. You know, it was greenlit before they had anything written down. And it's Bob Odenkirk's terrific. I still keep thinking, you know, this guy with his heart operation and things that he had a few years ago, I think this is going to be the last one, and we're going to see him start to do more interesting things as an actor, because he's a great presence on screen. And we've got these. That's enough. Thanks. Let's move him on to something bigger and better. Mm-hmm. Either of you two seen this?
Look, there's someone called Colin Salmon in this. It says he's a British actor, and I didn't know there was a Colin Salmon. A mix between me and Colin Hanks.
Oh, he's well known, actually. He's in some of the Bond movies as well.
Oh, really? Well, how did that pass me by? No, I haven't seen this yet, but we did. Somebody reviewed it in the group, and everyone was. Was it you?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Did you take it away, Alan?
Oh, no. I didn't mean to step on you there. I thought the first movie was terrific. And I kind of, like, as Gareth said, he watched the second one and it was fine. That seems to be exactly what you would expect.
Mm-hmm.
But I haven't watched the second one because I just couldn't be bothered. I knew it wouldn't be, well, I assumed it wouldn't be as good as the first one. Probably a relatively pale imitation, and I just wanted to quit while I was ahead in that franchise.
you can do far worse. There's a lot worse.
Oh, definitely. Look, if I'm ever stuck for something to watch on TV, I know that that will be a good bet when it comes out on the streaming services or whatever, if it's not already. I wouldn't be, you know, it wouldn't be, oh, we must go and see this sort of thing.
Yeah. Next up was one I watched with Austin, because I remember enjoying the pants off this, and I thought I must have been drunk when I watched it, because there's no way it should have been as much fun as it was. And blow me if it wasn't just as much fun, because it's great fun. I love Geostorm with Jared Butler, directed by and written by Dean Devlin. It's just big and dumb and stupid. And everything you want on a Saturday night with a beer and a bag of crisps. Jared Butler, Abby Cornish, Andy Garcia.
Yeah.
Right.
Mike Fellow, Andy Garcia.
Ed Harris, and you know, all big, dumb sci-fi action. And, you know, the world is being destroyed, and there's only one man who can save it. The one thing I would say is a bit bland is Jim Sturgess. He hardly ignites the screen, and again, I think he's a bit miscast, and maybe it should have been someone else who would be more convincing as Jared Berger's brother. And I think actually Alan Gilday would have made a good fit there, actually.
Hell yes, he would. Although I would have hated to have kind of made Ed Harris nervous about, you know, his performance in view of my own.
well, yeah, absolutely.
He obviously would have been a bit unnerved by my maestro contribution to the movie. Yeah, I'm just watching the wee thumbnail trailer here. That looks terrifically good fun. I'm sure I've seen it, but it does tend to blend into, was it Greenland was one that he did?
Where he's,
and then a couple of the other sort of Deep Impacts and Armageddons, they're all of a kind, I would say.
Yeah, I think it's entirely forgettable. As I said, I thought I was smoking something because I enjoyed it so much. Because all the reviews are really bad for it, but it's not. It's just damn good fun. There's nothing wrong with it.
Yeah. Some of the special effects that I'm watching as we speak are, you know, fun and visually impactful and all the rest of that. I mean, I would take that over, what was that, dreadful 2012? Any day.
Yes.
You know.
Yeah, so, that's vastly superior to that, and I think everyone would agree with that.
Well, I mean, I think that's something that anybody, no matter what the
actually, no.
color or
I'm
going
to go
cream.
Back, and I need to change my phrase there, because I watched 2012 again with my son a year ago or so, and it was actually all right. And you cringe at the cringy bits, but I got through it okay. I didn't hate it as much as I thought I would. Maybe it's aged a wee bit, because movies are just getting dumber as they go along.
Yes.
And this was the first big step into Dumbtown. And it's no longer mayor of Dumbtown. And Geostorm is certainly there as well, but it's not mayor. They're possibly being exiled for not being dumb enough.
Are we safe, or are we taking...
No, I'm the mayor of Dumbtown, absolutely.
Right. Well, I would like to be your assistant undersecretary.
I also liked Geostorm. I think we spoke about it back a long time ago on the show, and I think I enjoyed it in the same kind of way as you did, Gareth, so good.
Ted, you're aware that it does contain distressing scenes of Americans, which some people may find disturbing.
Oh, dear.
Or some Scottish guy playing an American, too.
Yeah.
Or others might find it gleeful.
Yes, indeed.
What's next?
Well, the next one is I bought it in 4K, and it's been sitting there. I've been looking to watch it. My son's always going, no, it looks a bit meh. But I finally got him to sit down and watch Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves. Mm-hmm. Kevin Costner and Morgan Freeman.
And Brian Adams.
And Brian Adams providing that bloody song.
Mm-hmm.
It's not as good as I remember it. I remember this coming out and the world going wild for it. And it being
everyone
a big,
went bananas, didn't they? It was colossal, that movie.
A big action adventure a la Indiana Jones or something like that. But see, to be honest, I think the film's like 2.5 hours long, and there's maybe 20 minutes of action in the whole film.
Yeah.
The rest of it is, you know, Kevin Costner walking around with no trousers or being all dramatic-y. And even the sort of the witty characters that you get, they inject a little bit of humor, they're crap. I like Mike McShane, I very much do, and they did not tap into him at all. You know, and they got him to spout off this badly written comedy, because this was his, I think it was his first big film, or it was sort of a step up for him. And he's so much better than the crap that he's having to
contend with.
Get away.
There.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's the one with Alan Rickman, isn't it?
Alan Rickman, yes.
Oh, man.
But it was surprisingly dark as well. You know, I had forgotten entirely about the sort of witchcrafty thing that's going on in the background, and the eyes of Newt and the frogs and things like that. And Alan Rickman has just, maybe it's because it's on the 4K, but Alan Rickman has a distinct layer of sweat over him throughout the whole thing, and his hair's all greasy, and it makes him just seem that much more nasty of a villain. And I hadn't got that before. He's doing the Die Hard thing here, and he did that a couple of times and across a good few movies. But here, physically, it's notable. But Kevin Costner was a bit bland. He's a wee bit of fun, but I think that guy's just got more and more boring as he's gone along. I like his movies. I like it whenever he makes westerns, but you know, having watched Silverado a good few weeks ago, you know, where he is just so much fun, you just wonder what happened as these actors get older. They're like, oh, I can't be having fun now. I'm older and I'm serious. I need to be doing drama.
I felt that way about Yellowstone. But I love The Untouchables. It's just that he's terrific. He's perfect in that, really.
Are we aware, team, that there is a currently rolling out TV show called Robin Hood, which it looks like it looks like it's running on Amazon Prime Video and MGM Plus, and it looks like it's up to episode 5. I don't know if we were aware of this, or we spoke about it before, did we, or not?
I'm not aware of that.
No, but it's one of those things that I think there's been so many over the years. Like, I've just stuck Robin Hood into IMDb to have a search, and there's lots. There's TV series from 2006 to 2009. There's TV series from the 1990s, and then 2014, 2000, or 1990, 1992. Yeah, there's loads.
Sure.
And then there was a big blockbuster movie a few years ago as well that was slated for being awful. I can't even remember what it was called, but Robin Hood the Rebellion. I think maybe that was it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But they tried to bring him back for another big epic movie and failed miserably.
Oh, Sean Bean's in this one. The only name that I'm recognising actually is Sean Bean. And he's in everything.
Oh, yeah, I see that now. He plays the Sheriff of Nottingham. Right, okay.
Anyway, it might be worth a look later on, when it's finished, and we can get hold of it.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Well, from that, and talking about a Kevin Costner film and how he was so boring, I move into the TV series that is the replacement to Yellowstone. Now, I tried to watch Yellowstone. I think I got through a couple of episodes of the first season and just thought...
Fell asleep.
You know, this is just... I keep hearing that it's absolutely terrific, but I just can't get into it.
Mm.
It has been replaced by The Last Frontier, which we had on Coming Soon a couple of months ago. And this is a big television series about a... Well, actually, I'll do it this way. If they were to make a TV series of The Fugitive that is not The Fugitive that we had before, but if they were to make a TV series of Gil Gerard, the Tommy Lee Jones character from U.S. Marshals, it would be this. It just has that feel to it, where Jason Clarke plays a sheriff, I think it is, who is, he's over a town in Alaska, and a plane has crashed with a bunch of prisoners on board, and all the prisoners have escaped, and each episode is them kind of tracking it. It is a bit like that, yes. Yeah. Each episode has them tracking down a particular prisoner with an overarching storyline that has a particular prisoner that they need to get, and it develops the relationships and the families and things like that about this small town in Alaska. It is jam-packed full of thrills, drama, action, a little bit of humour, and it's nice, and it's not too heavy, but it's not light-hearted. Jason Clarke is a very strong leading man, and he's putting in a damn fine performance here. Dominic Cooper, we haven't seen too much of him. He's here and there and pops in and out of each episode. He's all right. Simone Kessel plays Jason Clark's wife in it. She's excellent, absolutely superb. There's a girl I've never seen before called Haley Bennett, who plays a CIA agent who's dispatched and has a bit of a dark past and has, you know, you're querying everything that she's doing. Is she doing it right or what? You know, there's all kinds of twists and turns happening there. But it just really excites me. You know, this every episode of it has been nail-bitingly exciting, and I think is it the second episode or maybe the third has this massive action sequence involving a helicopter and this sort of big bus type thing, and you know, you'd expect to see that at the end of Nobody 2 or something on a big budget movie, because it was so good, and I dug it. And Jason Clarke plays a man's man. He's a family man, but he's a man's man as well. And he's there. He's prepared to club people around the head, shoot people, ask questions later. And, you know, it's not one of those TV shows that's scared to show you a dominant male force. He's the chief of police or the sheriff, and he's mm-hmm. in town, and he's going to sort things out. It's absolutely superb. And I compare that to I've watched about as much of this as I did of Yellowstone. And this is so much more enjoyable than Yellowstone. So do check this out. I've been recommending it highly to everyone I've seen. I haven't finished it yet. I think it's still going, actually. I think they're up to episode 9, but I've got 3 or 4 still to go to catch up. And I can't wait to watch it again. It's really, really good.
It's on Apple.
It's on Apple.
Yeah. Good. It looks really good, yeah. Yeah. I agree. And I do remember us doing it on Coming Soon. So, good stuff. Okay, cool. I'm going to talk about Locked, the 2025 film with Anthony Hopkins, who is voicing a remote controller of this car. The basic premise is that this guy breaks into this car. Well, he doesn't need to break into it because the door's open. He gets into this car, and when he gets inside, it all locks around him. And Anthony Hopkins starts to talk to him from a remote place, and this car is completely escape proof. So, and if this guy that's got into the car doesn't do as he's told, then he gets zapped by tasers and stuff. So Anthony Hopkins is completely in control of him, and so much so that he can move the car as well. He can drive him places. And it, he takes him off to this place and that place. It turns out in the end that we find out that, Anthony Hopkins' character who's called William, has got cancer, and he's just being really anarchic. He's trying to teach this, oik some lessons to be polite and just be friendly and not to go and steal things. However, he's got a background a bit like the Walking character earlier, where he's just down on his luck and he's stealing stuff to feed his family. It's not like he's just a criminal. He's a petty thief to keep his head above water. But Hopkins gets hold of him in the car, and he tries to teach him lessons. It ends up in this maniacal finale. Which is, and it's all very, very bloody in the end. And anyway, I won't say any more about the end of it, but it's just interesting. And we do eventually see William, the Anthony Hopkins character, but not for very long. And he's obviously been paid to just do a voice. And I think that that's where all the budget's gone, because the budget is very, very locked into, the interior of the car most of the time. So I can't imagine it was going to cost much to make, apart from his salary. And I've subsequently found out that this was based on a book from Argentina, which was made into another film called 4x4 in 2019. And then someone else in the group pointed out that this was also the topic of a film called Captured, which looks like it was a straight to video film or TV film or something, in 1998. I've not been able to watch either of those two, but it might be worth having a look at those if you're interested in the kind of backdrop to the Locked one, that which is what we're talking about now. But it was all right. It was okay. It was thought provoking in a sense about moral standards and moral dilemmas, rather, and so forth. And worth a look. But the other one, which I really wanted to talk about, was Meat Kills. and this is really good. I really enjoyed this.
It has another title as well, doesn't it?
It has. It's called Vliesdag. And also it's called Meat Day. So it's a Dutch project. It comes from Holland, and it is shot in English, so it's actually really easy to watch. But it's about this group of people who were trying to expose this farm that processes pigs in what they consider to be a cruel and inhumane way, and one of the people in the animal rights group infiltrates the farm and gets a job there, and she starts shooting video. She gets sacked, and then they all come back later on, and the intention is only to do some graffiti on the walls saying what they're doing inside and how dreadful it is. But when they get there, they get caught red-handed, and so it then descends into this kind of chaotic mess of the farmer that is in charge is not taking any prisoners, and he's out to just kill everyone that's come, including using all sorts of interesting ways of killing people, and using the pigs in a kind of Hannibal Mason Verger type way, and just any way you can think of where this whole bloodbath goes from bad to worse for these people who are were coming to kind of graffiti the wall. They also turn it around and start to terrorize and torture in some cases the people that run the farm and the family of the farmer. And it just the whole tone of the first half of the film is actually pretty slow. It feels quite low budget, which it probably is. I mean, it looks like someone's hired a farm, a dozen kind of unknown actors, and paid all the money on a special effects team. But it's suddenly about halfway through the film, it turns, the tone of it switches into this macabre and dark kind of, not comedy at all. It's taking itself very seriously, in fact. It's not at all darkly comic, but it's just dark. And then it starts to get into the kind of blood-soaked, bonkers gore fest. And it's just really good fun, and they've obviously had quite a lot of good fun making it, but it's not tongue-in-cheek. I often say that, you know, these films make me laugh, but it didn't make me laugh because it was tongue-in-cheek. It just made me laugh because they were being really inventive about ways in which to torture and kill each other, including any piece of farm machinery they could lay their hands on.
Oh, sounds brutal.
It is brutal, that's the word. Well done. And it's worth a watch if you're into that kind of genre of film, I think. But Alan, you won't like it.
No, I know that, but I'm glad. I actually am sort of enjoying your glee at the review.
Yeah, good film, I like it. Gareth, you'll love it.
Yeah, I think I have it on a list somewhere to watch at some point. Yeah.
Cool. Okay. Right, Alan, what have you got?
Briefly, not much, but in the last wee while, as you both know, I've been delving into classic British TV. So it started with The Prisoner, which was like long overdue to watch. Thoroughly enjoyed that, although it just started off bonkers and then became just incomprehensible as time went on, even for a lunatic like myself. Then followed that up by The Persuaders, which we discussed how much fun, what a jolly bump The Persuaders is. Yes, and great, great music indeed. Beautiful ladies, lovely cars, happy chaps running around having dopey, daft, silly-ass adventures. It was all good stuff. So last night I got round to watching the first episode of Randall and Hopkirk Deceased from 1969. Mm-hmm. And it is a charming little kind of detective series about a sort of partnership between two sort of, I would say, hardworking sleuths in London, one of whom is moided, I tells you. He's moided in a hit-and-run accident, and he haunts his friend. And so together they're able to they embark on solving crimes. One episode in, it was nice. It was obviously interesting to watch from a nostalgia point of view, and it was very well paced, nicely set up, good fun, very likable. Obviously a bit silly and occasionally a bit dated in places, But I'll probably dip in and out of it. I'm not getting the same. I'm actually missing the Persuaders, believe it or not. I think it's just the colourful gaiety of that show was just so engaging and so kind of needed, I think, as we plunge into a kind of gloomy, you know, winter with rising taxes and the decline of the West and all that good stuff. Just watching those two idiots clown around was just such a tonic. So I'll keep you posted if I do watch any more. Ted, I would imagine you would have enjoyed this when you were a nipper.
Yeah, I loved Randall and Hopkirk. I watched it every week when it came on, and I thought it was great. I got really good memories of it, him in his white suit.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. And Gaz, is this something you've come across?
Yeah, I remember watching it whenever I was a lot younger, because I really got into it. I think it was on Saturday mornings, or, you know, 6 o'clock on the weekdays or something like that, right, along with The Man from U.N.C.L.E. and a few shows like that.
Yeah, but then back in the day.
Was it Vic and Bob remade it as well?
I was just going to say that they had a big love affair for it. I think I maybe saw a bit of it. I loved Vic and Bob many moons ago, but I don't recall that particularly working very well. Is that the case? Or?
I remember watching the first episode of it, and this is Vic Reeves and Bob Mortimer, sorry, we're talking about. I remember Bob Mortimer being just a really enjoyable, lonely guy.
Lovely fella. Like, his persona, I can imagine, in a sort of drama like that or a show like that, you couldn't help but really, really root for him.
Yeah, it's always stuck with me. There was a shot of him sitting in a disco on a little chair with a dog or something on his lap, and he looked so pathetic, and it was so well done. And it's always just sat with me of how good he was.
Yes.
They didn't go on to make much more of it. I think they made one season, or it was cancelled halfway through or something, which was unfair.
Yeah. Oh, there you go. Anyway, so a modest offering from myself, but...
That's cool. I like that.
That'll do. Okay, there you go.
Very good. Okay, right. Time Poor coming soon. Gareth, have you got as good a crop as last time?
Oh, well, I've got a funny feeling I might have, because there's quite a mix here. There's something for everyone. Mm. We'll start with Ted. This one's for you. it's called Train Dreams. It's actually already out. It debuted on Netflix last week, November 21st, I think it came out. And the trailer is up there and you can watch it. And it's based on Dennis Johnson's beloved novella, Train Dreams, which is a moving portrait of Robert Grainier, a logger and railroad worker who leads a life of unexpected depth and beauty in a rapidly changing America in the early 20th century. It stars Joel Edgerton and Clifton Collins Jr., who is in Last Frontier, I do note. And it looks rather good. Looks rather good. Felicity Jones is in there, actually. I don't need to squat that now. But yeah, it does look like a nice period drama set up in the wilds of wherever it is, in the logging camp and in the Rockies or somewhere like that. And I just figured that everyone will probably quite like that, and everybody likes a story of drama and the farthest frontier type drama.
Is it a made up story, or is it? If we were American, would we know who Robert Grainier is? Is it a real person? Do we know?
No, I think it's a character in a novella by Dennis Johnson, as I said earlier.
Oh right, okay.
Yeah, I don't know that it's biographical in any way, but.
Okay, well, the trailer looks like it's beautifully made, really nice music going on. And, yeah, there's a great cast, including William H. Macy as well.
He's terrific.
Yeah, and there's a lot going on with this. And I thought that the trailer looked like it was seriously well made, and it should be really, really good. And we can watch it now. Did you agree, Alan?
Pretty much, yeah. I thought it looked... kind of outstanding, I have to say. Much more interesting than the standard fare that we get. There was hardly any sharks in it. And, you know, no, I thought it looked really interesting. It promised to be a good, solid, you know, it, just a movie about people whose lives I hadn't seen before. It looked really interesting. Really good.
Cool. Okay, right. Well, there's one to watch.
Let's kick this off with a strong contender, I think.
We will do. We'll move on to one which... Oh, I don't know about this one. It looked quite good when I read the synopsis and saw the poster, but then I watched the trailer and thought, I don't know if I will. I don't think so. It's called Dead Man's Wire, and it stars Bill Skarsgård, who finally got out of that car that Ted was banging on about. This is set on February the 8th, 1977, where Tony entered the office of Richard Hall, the president of the Meridian Mortgage Company, and took him hostage with a sawn-off shotgun, wired a dead man's wire from the trigger to around Tony's own neck. It seems to be a procedurally type movie that's based on a true story. Pacino's in there. Holman Domingo is in there. Cary Elwes is in there. It looks all right, but I don't know if I'm going to go too out of my way to see this. If it finds me, I'll probably watch it. But what did you gentlemen think?
It looks all right.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I kind of agree. I mean, it's like, I thought it looked, I mean, you got a definite sense of like the tension of the movie and the predicament just from the trailer, which worked really well. I wondered if it seemed to me that it didn't teeter over into kind of like quips and one-liners that would have kind of pulled the carpet out from under it. I thought, so it looks like they're playing it for the tension and the drama, rightly so. Yeah, it looks good.
I wonder how true the story is.
Yeah, hard to know, isn't it? It's like one of those Dog Day Afternoon, you know, based on a true story type thing. Again, with Pacino, clearly. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. I neglected to mention that it's actually directed by Gus Van Sant, who knows a thing or two about movies. He did My Own Private Idaho and To Die For...
I couldn't stand that Idaho movie. Gosh, that was pretentious bollocks.
Oh, wow, okay.
It started off really interestingly with... but then, it starts off like Paris, Texas with the narcolepsy scene and this beautiful cinematography, and then it's just a kind of like homoerotic, you know, love note to the lead actor the whole way through and all this stuff about Hamlet or something. I just couldn't make head nor tail of it.
That was Henry the Fourth, wasn't it?
Oh, right. I don't know. I'm glad you made it through. I couldn't make any sense, but...
But I figured you would just go straight for Psycho and go, oh, he's the guy who did that.
Oh, right. Yes. Well, that's worse. That's much worse to redo. That's worse. What were the other films, Gareth?
Good Will Hunting, Elephant.
Good Will Hunting was pretty good. I don't remember it being like as outstanding as everybody was raving about. I thought it was pretty good, but more as a kind of breakthrough for Matt Damon and the other lad. He was the big star at the time, but I think Damon had written the script with the other young lead and they'd got Williams on board, I think was the story. So that was quite impressive to watch from that point of view. Anyway.
Well, yes. It looks all right. I'm sure it's fine.
I'm sure it's fine. Exactly.
Next up is a film I mentioned earlier, which is called Nuremberg. And it's getting early Oscar whispers for Mr. Russell Crowe, who is playing that old rogue Hermann Göring.
lovable, cheeky uncle he was.
It's another... tale of the Nuremberg trial. I think actually I watched it quite recently. There was a mini series with Alec Baldwin and some other people in it, and it was really good. So this is a big screen adaptation of that whole trial thing. Michael Shannon taking over where Baldwin was playing as Justice Jackson. Remy Malek is in there as well. Colin Hanks That's where I mentioned it before. Mm-hmm. And Richard E. Grant and John Slattery as well. John Slattery's making a lot of movies now. He's really good. After Spotlight got him the spotlight. Mm-hmm. But yeah, this looks pretty well. It's a bit of a heart wrenching story. Whenever you see actually what happened, and it's one of those the victors get to point their fingers and say what you did wrong and things like that. And it's a bold movie. I'd like to say it's going to be a bold movie. What did you think of the trailer for Nuremberg?
Have you seen the Captain Kirk one yet? I was talking about that a while ago. I brought it to the show.
Nuremberg?
Yeah.
Is it Burt Lancaster and Spencer Tracy?
Yeah, yeah. The Captain Kirk, though, was the court clerk or something. And William Shatner, I should say. And that told a kind of similar tale in a different way, but it was very serious. Yeah. As is this one, and this looks like it's been brilliantly made from the trailer, and I so much so it could be like as you say Oscar film of the year, all the rest of it, and a superb cast. So I can't see how this can fail. Really, I didn't recognise him in the lead at first. I thought, oh well, yeah, of course it's him, Russell Crowe.
It's him. What was in Gladiator?
Yeah, they've made him look really fat. But actually, we saw him in a film quite recently when he was in a car. I can't remember what's that?
Unhinged. It was called.
Was it Unhinged? Yeah, and he was really fat in that as well. So perhaps he is really fat.
I think he made himself really fat.
Okay.
I think he did for the role, because there's some sequences in this where he's not quite as large, so I think he's gained the weight for the role. Okay. In the Alec Baldwin version, it's Brian Cox plays Goering, and I remember Michael Ironside saying a line, and he just said, he's as fat as a house. he really is, and I just suddenly noticed how much weight he put on, because I've watched Red Eye just a couple of weeks before that, where he was really thin.
Mm-hmm.
So, wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Couple of years.
Mm.
Right. Well, we'll all be looking forward to that then.
Mm. No, I'm not. As I said to you before, I agree with you that it's going to be lavishly well-made and all the rest of it. I see it as a sort of... I know this is not a political show, so I'm not going to say anything more about it, other than just to say I think it's... it's a bit rich, given what's going on in other parts of the world, to have another thing about that. So that's just my take on it. I don't think it's an accident, but I have no doubt that it will be a very well made film. Yeah.
Well, I do actually. I'm going to say that I have a bit of trust in Russell Crowe, in that he does things that he has said recently about current political situations. I don't believe he would do this for the paycheck. He would do this because the story is right, and if they were to try to mess around with it, he would waddle off.
So he would slowly be trailed off. Very good.
He would find the vending machine. No. Okay, so the next one is Magellan, and this is one I thought Alan might quite like, because I got real... the Werner Herzog vibes from this, this is the portrayal of Ferdinand Magellan and Beatrice Barbosa in the 1517 marriage in Seville, focusing on their brief time together before the departure of the Spanish Crown's expedition. It's a big epic set around the Spanish leaving the Philippines, wasn't it? And they've deployed the correct dialect that they were talking. It's not Tagalog in this. It's another dialect that is not as popular anymore.
I thought they were talking Portuguese.
Well, no, I think the Caucasian actors would be Portuguese, but the native Filipino.
Okay.
People are speaking whatever the dialect was at the time. I remember reading that about it, and so it'll be heavily subtitled for us for its brave running time of almost 3 hours. But it looks like something, and it's shot in that 1:85 ratio. I can't remember what it is, but it's using some really interesting tech.
to shoot it. I did see a listing of the tech, but there was a couple of different cameras, so I wasn't sure which one they'd used exclusively. But I figured, Alan, you probably dig this.
Yeah, I thought it looked lovely, and it's interesting that it is so kind of old-fashioned looking. I wondered if it was like a sort of classic movie from the 60s or 70s that had been dredged up that I wasn't aware of, and definitely evokes A Great Wrath of God, no shadow of a doubt about it. It looked really, really good, very beautifully made, perhaps almost kind of a little faux naive in the way the compositions were quite straightforward and unpretentious. You know, I noticed the composition, that the cinematography was very unaffected, unarty, if you like, in places. And so I thought, oh, that's quite interesting, you know. And again, with the aspect ratio being different, it's interesting to see how just the filmmakers compose visually with a much more constrained canvas. So, it looks really good.
Yeah. Ted, would you dig this?
Ugh, no. I just can't stand all the religious crap in it, and people behaving badly in the name of religion and going around killing people, and it's just like, for goodness sake. It's like a history lesson as well. If I'm going to be entertained, I'd rather watch something that is going to entertain me, not something that is going to be annoying the buggery out of me.
Yeah, fair play.
Okay.
So that's a no?
Yeah.
That's a no.
Well, fair enough. All right, Alan, how are your underpants?
Underpants are basically intact and relatively presentable, given a perfunctory scrape or two.
Two trailers, or you don't?
Yeah. No, I thought this looked pretty. They looked fine. Yeah, they looked fine.
Okay. Right. Well, the first one we're going to talk about is I think it's actually a British one called We Bury the Dead. This stars Daisy Ridley, and it's after a catastrophic military disaster. The dead don't just rise, they hunt.
Hey.
Ava searches for her missing husband, but what she finds is far more horrifying.
Yeah,
it's a zombie movie. And it looks like a particularly good one set in Britain. I'm dead excited about this. Early word is that it is rather good. I think the trailer is actually particularly good as well. I don't think it gives too much away, and it does exactly what a trailer should bloody well do, and it entices you to want to watch this, which I do. Ted?
Yeah, definitely. I think that they've created the kind of creatures, the undead, really interestingly and differently to the usual classic zombie arms down, staggering around kind of look. And they've made them just something different and special and better. It looks like it's really well made from the trailer. And Daisy Ridley is just great. She's clearly given it some in the lead there, isn't she? I'm really looking forward to this, definitely.
Really good to see her getting something to do, because she was so wasted in those Star Wars films. It's just like,
she was in Star Wars,
isn't it Daisy Ridley? I think yes. She is in one of, sorry,
they didn't notice.
Yeah. Yeah. She's just, you know, she's not really given anything to do there. So
given the last thing that she was in, which some people did not like, it was that Die Hard thing with Clive Owen, and I can't even remember the name of it, but it's entirely forgettable and not exactly the big epic that we were hoping to see for, well, Star Wars actors, aside from Harrison Ford, don't tend to go on to really big things. I was hoping for big things for her, and I'm hoping that this is just going to tap into that 28 days later frenzy that we're getting at the moment, that people want more, bigger, better zombie movies, and this could be the one. All right, speaking of strong horror films, we're getting a sequel to Silent Hill that's not the other Silent Hill that came out, Silent Hill Revelations, which was not bad. Both of the Silent Hill films are actually quite good. This third one, Return to Silent Hill, is based on Silent Hill 2, the game, and looks to be rather good, rather creepy, because the game was certainly very good. It's arriving in cinemas on January 22nd, which
isn't the best time of year for these types of films to be released. It's the dumping ground, so I don't know if I'm going to be too excited about that. But when a mysterious letter calls him back to Silent Hill to search for his lost love, James finds a once recognizable town and encounters terrifying figures, both familiar and new, and begins to question his own sanity. Now, Alan, I know that your pants turned brown when you saw this. Was I right?
You were right. Yeah. That looks fine. It's just not my bag. As you know, that sort of stuff doesn't particularly frighten me. But there you have it. Yeah, it's not my bag at all. But I'm sure it's pretty good.
But Ted, you'll probably like this, won't you?
I don't know anything about it. That's the trouble. I think I feel as though I need to go and watch the previous films or go and play the PC game or something. It's clearly the whole trailer makes it look as though it's been created, you know, it's over the top CGI everywhere. And it feels like a game, I thought. But if I can kind of get the gist of what's going on and what the backdrop is, maybe I should I watch the previous?
Yes, I think you'll probably quite enjoy the first two films.
Okay.
The first one more so than the second one. I don't know that the second one is going to be part of the canon going on, but it's still very much an enjoyable film to watch. So
okay.
Yeah.
I'll do some homework then.
Yes, look forward to hearing that.
Mm-hmm.
All right. The last one is worth mentioning because in the circles that I'm in, this seems
trigger warning
is a big movie. I've heard a lot about this and people getting very excited about this arriving. And I figured I'll just hand over to Alan and I'll ask you to explain what exactly is the Age of Disclosure.
Well, I'm going to defer to your notes that you've very kindly provided. So the Age of Disclosure is a current documentary. Trailer's linked in the show notes. It's about, I'll just read what it says. Featuring 34 US government insiders, this explosive documentary reveals an 80-year-old global cover-up of non-human intelligent life and a secret war among major nations to reverse engineer advanced technology of non-human origin. Tedward?
So it's a bunch of people that get together to make a documentary to make money, claiming that all this is true. There's no proof at all. Hang on a minute. We're back to religion again, aren't we? It's making claims of stuff that's unprovable and just to make some money and fleece everyone. Yeah, they can stick this. You've got other views, have you?
To a point, yeah. I mean, I'm not keen on the film. I haven't watched the film yet. The whole thing I've been obsessed with all my life, and it's monumental levels of gaslighting since the 2017 New York Times article where the Pentagon said, there's stuff out there. The UFOs are real. We need to get to the bottom of it. So there's been a lot of this kind of documentary stuff. And so I think some really genuinely well-intentioned people really working hard to get somebody to put, you know, to whistleblow on stuff like this, because obviously if any of it's true, the ramifications for whistleblowers would be catastrophic. The problem with this, really, from my point of view and others who are interested in it, is that it's really a calling card for the schism, if you like, of people who are calling for disclosure, as the term is, who seem to put a massive threat narrative over it, and notably the Royal Military Industrial Complex. So essentially, and this will be the last sentence of this, so don't worry, you don't have to tune out here. the problem a lot of people have with it is that, you know, yes, you've got very, very high caliber heavy hitters from the American government and highly credentialed people, but they're all presenting a pretty uniform, big threat thing. Now, from the best I can gauge, that there is really something substantial to the claims, but obviously they go back way, way further than 80 years, so that it's quite hard to push the notion that the phenomenon, whatever it may be, is entirely negative and entirely a threat, because if that was the case, then it's likely action would have been taken hundreds or thousands of years ago, because that the phenomena is sort of traceable all the way back through our cultures and histories. So at some point I'll get round to it, but it is one where I will be shouting at the TV going, that's bollocks, you know, get this guy on, he knows. But thank you for bringing it up, and also thank you for the kind of helpful little warnings. Alan, scary films coming up. Alan, UFOs, prepare diatribe. So, have you seen this, Gaz?
No, I haven't. I will be watching it as soon as possible.
Right. Yeah, it'd be interesting to hear.
I think you can, it does, it annoys me that it's a real rental property, you know, and it's been pushed that way. Yeah.
It's very expensive, isn't
it? Not something that they... It is, yes. They didn't just jump it onto YouTube and go, this is important. It's, here's this film, and you need to see it, because it's got everything you want to know.
To be fair, it's an expensive thing to make, and there's no reason why they should spend years of their lives, you know, and not make some money off the back of it. But I will say this one thing. One of the chief guys that they brought out to talk about this is Lou Elizondo. And it's like, you know, he was on the cover of Time magazine. It's like USA's foremost military strategist. His CV is literally that he was the head of military counterintelligence for the CIA. So his job is to lie professionally for military strategy. So, and he's been caught out on a ton of things that he's strategizing around this narrative. So to me, that's just like, you know, it's like the government have looked into the government's misbehavior and found that the government did nothing wrong. He's not the right guy to be speaking to. I think you would definitely need to have other people with countering views giving different sides of the story. And to be fair, the film may well do that. So we'll have to, I will check it out at some point.
Yeah. Okay. Well, just so that people know that it's out there, I suppose.
Yeah, absolutely.
And if you want to pay the money for it, you can pay the money for it. Ted?
Yep.
Okay. Thanks very much for that selection. That was very nice. And as you said at the outset, something for everyone.
Yeah.
Before we wrap things up, we'll just have a look at the final curtain, which has got one populated person in there who I'm sad to say that up until now I'd not heard of. So, Gareth.
Okay, well, we lost at the age of 82 Udo Kier, who is a very well-known German actor. I suppose depending on what circle you are in, he does a lot of art house. He does a lot of direct-to-video rubbish, to be honest, to put a bad word to it. But he comes from that great acting school of European intensity. I'm not going to say that I first came across him, but I started to get to know him from Suspiria, and then he just started popping up in various different films.
Oh, I've seen Suspiria. We spoke about that. Who did he play in that?
Yeah. He plays the boyfriend that she talks to outside of the school.
Oh, and, right, yeah, okay.
But as you look through his list of credits, you'll start to notice. Oh, yes, he was in Armageddon. That's right. He played the psychiatrist. It's a very small role, but he's still in there. Mm-hmm. And anyone who spent time in video libraries in the 1990s. Early 2000s, certainly was me. They got to see him appearing in all kinds of dreck. But in between times, he would make bigger films like Ace Ventura, Pet Detective. Because I went on to a couple of, one was Reddit, where people were saying, oh, I remember him in, just to get the feel for where people really knew him from. And they kept throwing in Ace Ventura, which is one I actually don't remember him in. Another person was going on about Johnny Mnemonic, which is something I haven't actually seen. Barbed Wire, which I don't remember him in at all. Ted, you'll know him from The Adventures of Pinocchio, the 90s one with Martin Landau in there.
I can't recall that.
No.
No.
Okay. moving on.
I'll have a look, though. Yeah.
He's in Blade, and that was The Last Call with that was Armand Arsante, I think. He's also in The New Adventures of Pinocchio, which is something that I figured that Ted would know as well, with Martin Landau. End of Days, Shadow of the Vampire, Dancer in the Dark with Bjork. Remember
End
that?
End of Days was quite a scary film.
Dancer in the Dark. I tried to watch that and I gave up. I couldn't get my head around what was going on, but I have got it on DVD somewhere.
Okay. Those who are into games will know him as Yuri from Command & Conquer Red Alert.
Oh, that was great stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, and he was in the FM. Remember Tim Curry was in there as well, and right. Not in that particular game, but in another one. Ray Wise. But yeah, there's so many films just going through, and he just popped up everywhere, and he was always a welcome face with his piercing blue eyes.
Dracula 3000. I've seen that.
Have you? Jared Butler's in that as well, isn't he?
Is he?
I think he plays Dracula.
I'm sure I've watched that back in the day.
I reviewed I went across Suspiria, Inferno, and Mother of Tears recently as well for my site, and I hadn't clocked him in Mother of Tears before. I actually noticed that he was in it, but he's playing a different character. So he's in two of the three in that trilogy. And Lords of Salem, he's in there too as a small role. And Nymphomaniac, Volume 2. Ted, you've got to have seen that.
The recent film, Nymphomaniac? The series of those. Yeah, I have seen the first one of those, but not the second one.
Yeah. He tends to tap into film directors as well. You know, I think film directors just want him in their movie. So he ends up making a few of them, like S. Craig Zahler, who did Dragged Across Concrete and Bone Tomahawk. He used him in most of his films, if not all of them. I can't remember if he was in Bone Tomahawk, but he was certainly in Brawl and Cell Block 9 and Dragged Across Concrete. So
Breaking the Waves. Kind of Breaking the Waves. I've covered that on the show because it was a film of the year or something. I made it. That was a great film, right? And I kind of remember the character he played in there was a sadistic sailor. Sorry, go on.
No, you're okay. I was kind of bringing it to a close there because I just go through mentioning how many movies there are. You know, Halloween by Rob Zombie is in there too. Grindhouse, he's one of the many people that's in that. He was in the faux trailer. Actually, Edgar Wright directed one of those as well, the one Don't. He was in the Werewolf Women of the SS.
Wow.
That trailer.
What a tasteful thing.
It's an incredible filmography, isn't it? I know. We often say that about most people in The Final Curtain, but it really is. There's so much in there.
Yeah.
And he still has a bunch of different products arriving soon. One series that he's in that never really gets much airplay is the Iron Sky series, which is a low budget. Alan, you'd love it. Have you?
I saw the first one. Yeah, in fact, the making of it is really, really better than the movie, I would have thought. It's just such a labor of love those guys put in on that film for yonks to get it off the ground. And they did a good job. I thought it was really full of fun and visually inventive and a bit daft. And, yeah, good sci-fi B-movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, they're still making them. There's a third one coming, I think, called The Ark. Which stars Udo. And he also played Adolf Hitler in that TV series with Al Pacino, Hunters.
Right. Very good. Very good. I wasn't aware of that. Mm. So there you go. Who else do we know who recently played Adolf Hitler in a tasteful film?
I think someone's going to start getting typecast as Adolf Hitler.
I did not know him by name, but going through these, I'm going, yes, of course, I remember him in that and remember him in the other and so on and so forth. I wasn't aware of the Command & Conquer credit and some of those other things. Fair play to you, sir.
Nobody's mentioned the elephant in the room, Andy Warhol's Flesh for Frankenstein, 1973. I've seen that, and that is a bizarre film. Andy Warhol apparently wasn't really that involved in it. He wasn't the director. Apparently he used to pop in and out of the set, according to one review I read, and he kind of put his name to it. But his name's plastered all over the DVDs and what have you. It's a bizarre film where he plays this... He's Frankenstein character with these two naked bodies where he does all sorts of things to them. It's a while since I saw it, but I seem to remember you... I think, Gareth, you might have more memory of it than me, have you?
I haven't seen it in a good long while, but he was in another Warhol movie as well, the Dracula one as well, Blood for Dracula.
Oh, okay.
So again, he was utilized by, well, I suppose that director was Paul Morrissey.
Yeah,
made those two films, but Andy Warhol got his name put on them because he produced them or something like that, or he just happened to be there. Why? And he was a big name, so why not?
Yeah. He was interested in the subject matter because it was just bizarre and off the wall. And it really was. If you watch Flesh for Frankenstein, you'll see all sorts of just bonkers things going on. I won't even start to talk about it because it's so, part of it is so grotesque and revolting. You don't even want to talk about it. But anyway, wow. That's what I thought he was... from reading up since you put his name in the show notes, I thought that's what he was most famous for. Obviously not. Mm. A million and one other things.
Yeah. It's impossible to list them. Mm. But that's what you get whenever you're one of those character actors that's just never out of work.
Indeed. Okay, thanks very much, everyone, for listening. And thank you to Gareth and Alan for hanging in there as well.
It was a pleasure. Thank you.
Projectorroom.co.uk is our website. You'll find all the links to all the stuff that we talked about in there. PodHub UK is still going on Steve's site, so check out any links in there that you want to. TedSalmon.com is where you'll find everything else in case you get lost, including the other audio podcasts we're involved, and also all the MeWe groups. So do join us in the MeWe groups. Let us know what you've been watching, and we will bring highlights of those to the shows coming along. And we'll be back in a fortnight's time with another one. So we hope you'll join us then, again, in the Projector Room.